can be engaged on a number of levels. We have a couple of great filmmakers and video editors, and we also have a variety of other just kinds of talents and interests in the mix. So whatever you have to offer, there's room for it, and we constantly need to grow and build our capacity to do this very multifaceted work. So those are just some of the ways. We're always down for screenings. We come through for screenings where we have questions and answers at the end and build. It's really not just about the so-called product of the film. It's really about having some sort of document, a film, a short work. We have something called Ask a OG, which is one of our newer segments, where we get up with movement elders and just connect with them and ask them fundamental questions so that we can share that out in real time, and, you know, through these media that people are relating to all the time, you know, whether it be a short clip, a long installment, like music videos. We're putting together a film on the People's Senate. So all of that and more encompasses what ATP is about, because ultimately it's just about connecting with the people and building with them in the clearest way possible and as compellingly as possible, so our youth especially can, you know, continue to pick up the work.
Well, these are a lot of great resources. It's always time to pick up the work. And folks, you've been listening to Prison Pipeline, airing from the studios of KBOO Portland. Listen to this and previous Prison Pipeline programs at kboo.fm/prisonpipeline. Like Prison Pipeline on Facebook. Special thanks to our amazing guest and a Prison Pipeline Collective member.
This is Ursula K. Le Guin, and you are listening to KBOO, the cheerful voice of social conscience. KBOO, Portland.
It seems like recently the struggle to take action on climate change has gotten more complicated. And there are a lot of solutions that are presented to us that at first glance look kind of good because they have the words green or renewable in them. But then when you dig into them more deeply, it turns out that not only are they a waste of precious time, but they actually are climate solutions that are worse for the climate. It's like chasing chimeras, a beast from Greek mythology, which sounds fabulous but ends up to be a fanciful illusion.
Chasing Chimeras, The Lure of Deceptive Climate Solutions, a new documentary by veteran producer Barbara Bernstein, premieres on Locus Focus Monday, January 27th at 10 a.m. Tune into Locus Focus on KBOO Community Radio, 90.7 FM Portland, 104.3 FM Corvallis, or 91.9 FM Hood River, or anywhere in the world streaming online at kboo.fm. That's Chasing Chimeras, The Lure of Deceptive Climate Solutions on Locus Focus Monday, January 27th at 10 a.m.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. KBOO's Board of Directors meets on the fourth Monday of the month at 6 p.m. This month's meeting will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland and online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting virtually can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
One, two, three, four.
Y'all ready for this?
Ladies and gentlemen.
Davey D, Hard Knock Radio, hanging out with you this afternoon. We did an in-depth story around the fires in Southern California. We took a focus on the city of Altadena, talked to a couple of people who are organizers and unfortunately lost their homes, and got a lot of insight and a lot of information that had not been covered by the mainstream. One of the stories that we wanted to follow up on, and we've heard bits and pieces, but we haven't necessarily talked to people directly involved, We're talking about the use of incarcerated folks to put out the fires. And that's a very interesting scenario that's going on. It comes on the heels of, first of all, a ballot measure that was put on the November ballot, I think it was measure 6, that would have disallowed involuntary servitude if you're incarcerated. In other words, end slavery. That was defeated, meaning that people here in California said, nah, people who are incarcerated should be forced to work for little or no pay. So that's one issue. The second issue is that we've known for a long time that folks who are incarcerated have been putting out fires. The state is known for having a number of wildfires even before climate change. It's only enhanced since we started recognizing the impact of climate change. And so the conversation had been, well, this could be a good thing. These folks who are locked up are learning a skill. They're doing something useful for the community. They're helping save lives. They're putting out fires, et cetera, et cetera. The issue is, at least from the people that we talk to, because this is not the first time we've covered this, is that many who've gotten out can't get a job with the regular fire department, even though they've done some pretty good work in terms of putting out fires. Now with this situation blooming and the spotlight being put on incarcerated folks helping put out these fires, we wanted to dig in a lot deeper, and we have somebody who is up for the task. His name is Liddell Hayes. He's the founder and CEO of Operation Flame, which is a community-based organization that teaches youth and young adults from disadvantaged communities as well as an entry population on how to fight wildfires. He himself is somebody who was fighting these fires when he was incarcerated, and so he can give us insight. So first of all, welcome to the show, Liddell. Good to have you. How have you been doing with the fires, first of all, before we start any conversation?
I'm fortunate just to live probably about 20 minutes south of Altadena area if there is no freeway traffic. So it's okay for me, but not okay for others. We've all have, you know, problems with breathing, especially those who may have asthma. You know, might have a little bit more problems, but as for overall, I'm okay. We're just creating efforts to try to get some relief to those who are suffering right now.
You fought these wildfires when you were incarcerated. How did that come about? What was that program like? What did you learn from it?
It was new to me. Prior to incarceration, you know, a lot of us, you know, are not privy to watching a lot of the news. It's nothing that we wanted to get into. So we didn't really know much about wildfires. And during my incarceration, I was asked about fire camp. And I'm like, well, what is that? So make a long story short, I went through the training and succeeded and was sent to an actual camp from the prison where they trained us at. And it changed my life. I didn't know nothing about wildfire. So after my first fire, one of the captains said to me, you can do this upon, you know, your release from incarceration. And my eyes open up like, whoa, this giving me an avenue. So it was life changing for me being out there learning about wildfires, learning how to save life, property, and environment. That was the challenge for me. But I knew that I would be faced with uncertainties when I was released from custody. So I prepared myself for it.
I mentioned at the start of the show, it's not the first time we've had this conversation on air, you know, our first time with you, but we've had others on. And they talked about the difficulty of actually getting a job within the fire department, even though you went through rigorous training and you definitely put in the hours, so to speak. you know, yes. The hands-on. I mean, you all were like sun up to sundown in many situations. Two things. One, how difficult was it for you once you got out? Did they respect you as somebody who put in that work? And two, the other kind of conversation that has emerged from this is whether or not folks like yourself were being exploited. We've heard the stories even recently of people working from sunup to sundown, even more hours than firefighters themselves, not with all the breaks, not with all the types of accoutrements that others may get when they're fighting it from not being incarcerated. So some have described it as kind of being exploitative. Others said, well, they did the crime and they need to do the time and this is a good way for them to do it. How did you see this and what was it like for you once you got out?
It was it's 50-50. You can work, but I was released from fire camp from custody in 2011. It's a lot different now, moving fast forward. But it was challenging because, yeah, you do have a felony background. There was two agencies that hire ex-felons. That's the United States Forest Service, and I'm going to say Cal Fire, which is the states. But with the Forest Service, there are so many other federal agencies within that whole Department of Agriculture. So there's Forest Service, BLM, National Park Service, BIA. All of those will hire ex-felons to fight wildfires. The state will as well once you have the right training. The challenge is you're looking at counties, city departments, those departments that do more of structural firefighting are the ones that you're going to meet resistance with to gain employment with. And I can be fair about it. We know they're only hiring those who are best qualified, those that have paramedic backgrounds. They're hiring firefighter paramedics. But if you allow us the opportunity to take those limitations off of our background, don't use that against us and allow us to go the same route so that we can become paramedics and then pursue it, give us that same opportunity. So certain agencies won't even look our way because we don't have certain certificates or training as far as EMT or paramedic because of their felony convictions. Some EMTs would gun us down off the top, but there are some agencies, but you're not going to make the most lucrative amount of money as you will a municipal station. And to answer the exploited, you do feel exploited, but here it is. I've worked numerous 48-hour shifts. If we're the first on scene of a wildfire and we're there first, we have to wait for it to be relief. Sometimes that comes 48 hours of just getting it, chasing fires up and down mountains and around people's homes and their houses. You do all this work, but to some, when we come home, it does make it challenging to find employment because only certain agencies might hire you. And then me personally, I live in California. When I first got hired with the Forest Service, I had to go to Oregon to accept a position. So there's challenges we will face when we come home, but time and not giving up will help you get there. But now things are a lot better with the Forest Service as well as Cal Fire.
Liddell Hayes is our guest talking about those who are incarcerated working on the front lines of these fires. When you were doing this, did you interact with other firefighters? Because in a thing like this, you got, first of all, people coming from all over the world at this point. So, you know, every able-bodied person that you can get seems to be appreciated. I mean, we've seen folks from South Africa showing up with battalions, you know, Mexico sending over folks. So when you're out there, what was the interaction like with fellow firefighters?
They really appreciated what it is that we've done. We are normally what you call boots on the ground. we fight fires without water until water gets there. And it's strange how you can hear that. So basically, we go in, 17 of us as an inmate, two handsaws. We use the chainsaws, not handsaws, we use the chainsaws to remove unburned fuel from burn fuel while hand crews come and scrape the ground to bare mineral soil. That's predominantly what it is that we do, and we try to line that fire all the way around to a particular point where it can't spread. We hope that it holds. So when other firefighters see us, that what we've done, the amount of work that we were able to do towards containment and control, we're often applauded. Some see us work and say, hey, man, you know, you guys really should pursue this as a career. You know, upon your release, start off somewhere. So my thing was, when I was released from custody, I was 34 years old. So I did get hired with the United States Forest Service. I fought wildfires for some years up until my wife was diagnosed with breast cancer. But during the time I went to a MA fire camp, mentally, I was already home, even though I was still incarcerated. I created a nonprofit organization within my head. So that's where it leads me to where I am right now. But we did get a lot of respect from those who are actually out there working for municipal stations, the Forest Service, Cal Fire. They gave us a helping hand, but I do think that we need to do more and do better by inmates as far as lifting restrictions for them to become EMTs and paramedics so they can have the same ample of opportunity chance that other individuals do.
Liddell, couple of things. I was reading a post the other day, and let me see if I can find it, because it had some interesting insights, and I wanted to give maybe your thoughts on how you look at some of this. Give me a second here. Okay, so one of the posts that I looked at said, it described the conditions within the many of the California penal systems. And it said that a lot of times it's unlivable. It's very detrimental. And people would jump at the opportunity to, you know, put their lives on the line and go to fire camp rather than stay in a cell. In a place that is definitely, you know, going to pot, you know, going to hell. How did you see that? Was this like, whoo, you know what? Anything to get me out. To get me out.
That is so true. One of the first things individuals said, man, when you going to camp, man, you about to eat good, you about to live better, you got a little bit more freedom, more work to do. You get to go out and you get to do things in the public that, you know, can help the community. And I'm like, okay, because I've never been to fire camp. I'm like, all right. But when you look at it right now, a lot of citizens does not know they're in prisons behind the wall. You can only flush a toilet twice in 15 minutes. If not, it's going to shut down for 15 minutes. You can't flush that toilet no more. So imagine being on a lockdown with someone. It's two people in that cell, and you have to use the bathroom. You just can't hold it no more. You got to be selective to how you flush the toilet, because wow, the system has it so that you flush right now, you flush it again, it's going to shut off for 15 minutes.
Wow.
So we really need to think about what it is, and let your viewers have this conversation. Do they really know what goes on inside the conditions? They'll always tell you, and I just looked at an article yesterday about a female correctional officer suing the department for her getting assaulted. She's not going to mention the disrespect that she might have led up to her assault, what she might have done, things that go unchecked within that system that led to her. No one is in there just picking out correctional officers and just assaulting them. Things that's going on in there that citizens don't know about, and believe it or not, if you're doing time for a crime, why are you working for $1 an hour while the government makes an amount of money that they only giving you $1 off of? Now, why don't they tell the truth? How much money are they getting per inmate, per day, or per hour versus what they give us?
And are they making money? Are they making money when you all are out there?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
Yes. there's money being made per inmate, but you only give the inmate $1 an hour. So my 5 years of fighting wildfires, I made $1 an hour. So how much did the state get? Because there's correctional officers that got to follow us from the inmate fire camp all the way to where the fire is. The fire could be 9 hours away from here. Who's paying that salary? So let the truth be told, how much money are the state giving per inmate, but you're only giving us $1 out of it? Conditions are horrible.
Adele Hayes, somebody listening to this might go, well, you know, why should we pay you? You did a crime. Okay. You bit my car. You smashed and grabbed and took some groceries from the store. I'm playing devil's advocate for the moment. But that's the mindset of people thinking, right? This is why when we did Prop 6, people were like, nah, you know, let slavery continue. Let them do that work. So, yeah, there's money being made. It's coming in. It's not going to you, those who are incarcerated. What do you say to people that are kind of like, well, what's wrong with that?
That's an excellent question. I'll say this. I'm going to recite a number out to you. I'm going to say $137,000. That's how much the state gets per year, per inmate. That's in the state of California. Now, let's add labor to that. How much money? Okay, if I broke your window, or I took something from you, well, the state getting $137,000, why can't they pay for it? So you're going to have this man work all this time that he's here. The state makes the money, but you're not being compensated for nothing that you've done or nothing that happened to you. But the state is making hand over fist. $137,000, that's just base pay for us to be housed. That's not including the transportation. It's not including medical. That's not including dental. That's not including the inmate labor that's going in for inmates making license plates. A lot of your chicken come from prisons. So a lot of your clothing that you get come from out of inmate labor that they sell, that they get rid of, that they have contracts for. So that increases that number from 137 and shoots it north. How much money are they receiving from your busted window? So if I'm working to pay for paying my debt, why isn't my debt paid to you? So it's kind of like, no, I get it. You do the time, you do the crime, you do the time. But they created ways to exploit us to make vucu millions off of inmate labor and not pay the victims or not even compensate the individuals that's doing the work correctly. Didn't you give me two? Let's say right now.
Let's go back to this too. Okay. And we also started off by saying it's not like they reinvested the money into the prisons itself. So it's not like all of a sudden you got nice facilities. You know, it's the downkeeping of these facilities that often go, heck, I'll go to the fire camp because that's going to be a little bit better. So where's that money going, I guess, is the question. I know these prison guards are making crazy money, much more than teachers. My wife just left. She's making like half of what they make.
Oh, yeah, that's correct. You're looking at almost $100,000 a year per correctional officer. They start you out at roughly $75,000, $80,000 a year. And then the overtime take you to $100,000. So you're paying for their salaries. You're paying for politicians. That's the reason why some of these politicians run on tough on crime laws to keep that funding going. It costs us more to incarcerate individuals than what it is to send us to college. California prison system is bigger than the school board. So if you look at who funded the three strikes law, that was the prison board. Party class was funded by the prison laws. Why? Because there was a revolving door, inmates going home. So if you want to stay employed, you need to come up with something that can keep them there longer. So if you look at who funded the California three strikes law, CCPOA, that's the prison board. Now you're talking about you going from halftime to 85%. You keep them there 85%, you need more and more correctional officers, job security.
We're talking with Liddell Hayes, if you're just tuning in, talking about folks who are incarcerated fighting these fires in Southern Cal and getting it from somebody who knows what it's about firsthand. put on your hat personally when you were doing this? We'll remove from this conversation exploitation and the numbers and all that, but just you as an individual. If me and you are incarcerated, I come in and I have a certain disposition towards you and you towards me, what is working on that fire line? How did it change the way that you all as incarcerated folks interacted with one another? Was it a good thing? Did we come away? Did we feel like, you know what? I have a new outlook on life. We get along with each other. That's one question. The second thing, and I'll put on the political thing again, since we know that there's always been an economic incentive to keep crime going, so to speak, to keep these doors to the prisons constantly occupied. Well, if Liddell Hayes is getting a skill and he's getting along with Davy D and we're not beefing no more and we're coming out as productive citizens, that don't do me no good if my money and portfolio is based upon constant incarceration. So the question becomes, do I, one, either try to undermine this situation, or do I put some things in place so that even as you get these skills and some sort of social benefit, I can still count on you to come back and keep these coffers filled? So those are two questions, and I'll let you have at it.
Okay. Basically, when you get to fire camp, it's a whole different life in camp. We don't want to see anyone get hurt. We don't want to see anyone lose their property. And this is a true story. There is an individual who, to this day, we still are good friends. We communicate with each other quite often. But he was a skinhead. And wow. I saw his tattoos, and I know what they stand for. And he was a little older than me. And we looked at each other, all right, you know, so we're out here fighting fire. And we're just so tired to the point where the captain's just like, okay, we can bed it down right here. We just sat down and just looked at each other. He said, man, I'm tired. I'm like, man, I'm whooped. And we just laughed. And from there, we developed a bond. So as we going through these fires and we're just training every day and doing great projects, we talked. He said, man, I know you see the tattoos. Man, I was just born and taught to hate. He said, that was, I know, a part of my life that I regret. You know, I want to, like, move on from it, but, you know, it shows on my body. And when we had that conversation, man, I wind up talking not only with him, but wind up meeting his father. We were both released. I even took my son. He's 11 now, but my son was like 4 years old. I took my son out to Orange County. I was invited to his house to meet his family. And we just created a bond. It doesn't matter who you are. When we fight in wildfires, our job is to protect life, property, and environment. We're trained for that. So that was our main objective, our main mission, regardless on what race, color, greed, or whatever you kind of like look at. And as far as breaking a system, when you learn a trade, sometimes I can say we need to hold ourselves accountable. You know, I'm with that notion is don't, how can I bury my past if you're chasing me with a shovel? So me personally, I know my background is behind me. I choose to move on and create an organization that can reduce recidivism and keep us productive and keep moving forward, if that's the case. But the system does not, outside of fire camp, behind the wall, they've taken all the trades. Budget cuts. We don't have nothing but people just sitting there behind the wall or on the yard looking at each other, creating violent atmosphere.
Did you say budget cuts?
Yes.
But we just talked about all the money that's coming in.
Oh, that's for them. That's not for us. That's for the politicians to ride around and send their kids to some of these big major stars, their concerts and everything, so they can buy these $10,000 toilets and these elaborate vacations that they take. That's some of that money goes towards correctional officers, their pay. The rest goes to Sacramento, to state capital. That's not for us. They give us $200. If I do 10 years, That's over 1.3 million. They're only going to give me $200. And if I got to pay for the Greyhound ride back home, it's coming out of that $200. So wow. what are they doing to help us, to insinuate that you just made all this money off of us? You just made $1.3 million off of somebody that did 10 years. That's not including the inmate labor that person has done. So the minimum you made $1.3 million, you only give them $200. So what's the percentage of that? I wonder. My math is not that good.
You have, you said you prepared yourself.
That's correct.
You were gamed up, as we like to say.
Yes.
So when you got out, you were able to start Operation Flame. Talk a little bit about that and how has that been helpful for the work that you're doing.
Yeah, I took it personal. I'm one that I didn't forget. I don't want to see anyone go down the same path that I went down. So I created an organization while I was in fire camp, but I couldn't do it until I came home. So I created Operation Flame based on my 5 years of being in MA fire camp. So what I do is I was given a grant by the city of Los Angeles under the direction of Mayor Kara Bass and her staff, EWDD as well, along with Northeast Trees is our fiscal sponsor. So we teach young adults how to fight wildfires. We teach them awareness, mitigation, suppression skills. We also provide them with NWCG training so they can receive certificates after they pass the test. From there, we take them out into the forest and we let them do some drills. We let them do a little hiking just to let them see what it's like and how it feels. There are some from certain parts of the city that have jobs, received job offers just recently. So they're doing their onboarding paperwork to get picked up. It's been phenomenal, a blessing for me. We thrive at giving back. This is giving back. I knew because of my age, I was not going to become a chief with no agency. I was not going to become a captain. But I said, you know what? I don't have to. This is what I want, to give back to my community. How? To show them the way that I went through and how easy it is to be recognized as a firefighter at the age of 18. Why? For one, college is not for everybody. So there are some of us that don't want to go to college, and I understand that. But you can learn to fight wildfires at the age of 18, and that's what we do. We ran 7 cohorts last year. We were only supposed to do 2 of 50 people. We did 7 at 144, I believe. Some have already been hired. There's some that we have been referred to us, to officials for hiring purposes. All we want to do in the city of Los Angeles is give back. We have no fire crew in South Central Los Angeles. We're trying to create one. So we're talking to people saying, hey, we have the means to create a fire crew. Give us the chance. Allow us. Let us work with y'all. Let us. We have retired fire captains from the agency who's on our staff that comes out and help us train, help us do the classworks, and we get things done as far as getting these individuals certified from the NWCG level.
Liddell, let me ask you this. First of all, having that agency in its organization, Operation Flame, you know, I'm always of the mindset, give people the opportunities before they go down the wrong road, you know, and this sounds like, you know, being preemptive. It's the type of opportunities we often hear about that are afforded people in other communities, you know, more affluent communities, where you wake up and it's like, hey, you know, your Uncle Leroy is going to take you to fire camp. Your Uncle James is going to take you over here. And, you know, you could start, as you said, getting into a trade. And that's a good thing. Right now, I mentioned early in the show that we have climate change. Mm-hmm. And that's made the fires much more frequent and much more intense. And I'm thinking, as you're talking, I'm saying, wow, maybe everybody in the community needs to know how to fight fires. This you know, this is a skill, sure, to get a good job, but just because, you know, fire breaks out here where I'm at, it might be good to have the skills that you have right now, you know, because we might be able to save the neighborhood. Maybe if more people in Altadena, and I'm not blaming the people at all, but maybe if more folks had that training, they might have been able to mitigate some of the stuff that was happening, because they would be able to immediately jump into action and know what to do to minimize the damage. And it just seems like this needs to be a set of skills that all of us have to help our community and help ourselves, along with, you know, first aid and, you know, the stuff that you learn at an EMT, because the cavalry ain't coming. We're seeing that. You are the cavalry at this point. And so just your thoughts on that alone, us being able to have a skill set. Heck, I might have to, me and my son might have to, your daughter might have to come down there to your fire camp and train, just so we know.
Yeah. Climate change has made the blame game unfair to politicians. We have to understand and be well-versed and educated on climate change. In Southern California, we've had no rain in 8 months. We've endured heat waves earlier during the summer, which dries out a lot of the fuel. So we have low fuel moistures, high heat, low RH, which is relative humidity, which is lack of moisture in the air with no precipitation, which is moisture. What do we think is going to happen when a fire sparks? We don't know when it's coming. To be honest with you, we haven't had a good burn in Santa Ana season in Southern California in some years. So when you have all of the things I mentioned, we have what's called alignment. When things are properly aligned, if a disaster like a fire starts, catastrophe will happen. Just so happened a fire sparked, I believe it was a house in Palisades, during a Santa Ana wind event, when you had winds blowing from 80 to 100 miles per hour. There's nothing you can do to fight that. I don't care how many people you have pre-pulled in certain positions, you're going to constantly have winds blowing embers 2 and 3 miles ahead of the fire that can create new fires. You cannot fly into that type of wind. I don't care if those fire hydrants were fully loaded. All those firefighters trying to get water at the same time out of those hydrants, you're going to have a problem with pressure. So why are we sitting here playing the blame game when people are losing their lives? People are losing their homes. You're blaming people? No, we can't do this. We need to come together and say, you know what? We can deal with our differences outside of the media, within y'all cells, behind closed doors, and get these people some help. Everybody did not have insurance. Insurance was dropping people. People, the heck with the insurance. Give me back the memories. A man died holding on to his water hose. Another man died because he couldn't get his paraplegic son out of the house. I'm not leaving the house without my son either. This is why we're here. We're trying, and we started this program last year to bring awareness, to get individuals certified so that they can go out and apply for opportunities to fight wildfires in a disadvantaged community of color. We're here. We're knocking on the door. I read a stat a couple of years ago. The Forest Service at that time was over 80%, 83% white, 7% Hispanic, 3% Black, and the rest was Pacific Islanders. We don't have representation for people that look like me, that come from areas like me in South Central Los Angeles. We don't even have a wildfire training crew that can contract with certain agencies here. That's why we're here. We're trying to create that atmosphere so that we can get young adults before they turn bad, get them trained, get them to believe in themselves, get them employed so they can have careers. The Forest Service and CAL FIRE is leading the way for that. They have individuals, I'm not going to say their names, but they have captains and chiefs that were ex-felons. It can happen and is working.
Real talk. And just having that skill set, as you said, can do wonders.
Absolutely. You know?
I always like to joke around that, you know, when I was younger, I joined the Boy Scouts and they sent me to those camps and, you know, taught you how to fish and do all that. You know, that's just a good skill to have. When, you know, when you're in the city, you don't see that every day, you know, but heck, an earthquake or something crazy like that can leave us in the dark. And it's, I think it's just good to have that, you
yes,
know,
always.
For anything, it gives you confidence, you
yes.
know, you know, as we close out, I want you to, one, give our audience some marching orders, anything that you want to shed light on to, whether it's stuff that's not been covered in the mainstream, some viewpoints that need to be uplifted, any way in which they can help. You know, we're heard all around the country, so if there's something that folks should or, you know, should be doing, let us know. And, yeah, we'll start with that.
Yeah, well, our organization right now is waiting on what's called a blanket purchase agreement. That's through SAMHSA.gov, where we can create a fire crew. And it will be a contract crew that will be sent out to fires. They have this, I believe, every 3 years. This is one of the years of its inception. So we're waiting on that. We train, do our in-class training out of my wife's church. In South Central. But one of the things that we are asking for is donations. We would love to have our own training facility so that we can do more firefighter training and we can operate both during day and longer night classes so that we can be able to say we got a class at daytime and also a class at nighttime that we won't have to just be there for 4 hours. So we're looking for donations that can help us achieve a down payment on a building. And you can donate to our website at operationflame.org. That's one of the ways that you can give back. And also, if you know anyone in this Los Angeles area that want to learn how to fight wildfires, they can go to our IG page and can follow us at Operation_Flame on IG. And also, we would love to, I don't know if we have anyone out there training young adults out there in your neck of the woods in the Bay Area. We'll love to come out there and see what we can put together to get people trained as well. The more, why is it that we're going to Africa, Mexico, Canada, Australia, and we have people that's able here? We can take Operation Flame. We can maneuver, and we are a nonprofit organization with IRS respects. We can create an atmosphere out there in your neck of the woods to young adults who want to learn this trade. And that way we can keep things in-house the way it's supposed to be, where it should be. We don't mind people getting called in from out of state, but at the same time, let's allow some of us to learn this trade here on the home front so that we can defend our own home.
From a fire perspective, are there new tools that are coming out each year? You know, new technologies, new ways in which to fight. I mean, for example, I think the obvious one is like, now we can use drones, right? But yeah. Nowadays, if you're fighting a fire, are you sitting up there looking at, you know, a digital map or, you know, and, you know, with AI, are they predicting, hey, if the flame is this hot, it's going to go over here, so you're all able to beat it? Or do they even have new tools that they developed that you're able to use?
I can say this is one trade AI will not take over. You need boots on the ground and you have to make decisions right then and there. So, but yes, they are coming with new technology, and to have electronic maps or maps that can go from your iPhone or maps for your watch is a lot better for us. Even paper maps that we get during daily briefings are excellent. You are not going to never deviate from the chainsaws and the hand tools because that's what's needed. As I said, we fight fire without water, so we need chainsaws and hand tools.
Right.
So there's nothing that's going to stop that because we've been on fires when it was just us and our tools. up until we get a hose laid in or a helicopter drop. If we don't have that at our disposal, we got to keep going. So
I was talking to somebody and they were saying, like, you all have to go up these crazy ravines and everything. Like, you know, for folks don't know, I guess, you know, Altadena and all that, that's San Gabriel Valley. And, you know, like, there's people that hike and then there's people that hike. And if you want to go hiking in some of those places, that's a woo. You know, that's some Olympic, that's Olympic training, right? And then there's just some places around there where you can't get to, right?
Yeah.
And that's what they were sending you all to do it. Like, y'all travel that mountain. That's some work, man. That's some craziness.
It is. You have to be, we take conditioning to heart. You have to be in excellent condition shape. If you're not there, you can get there. It's not nothing that you can't do. But you have to sooner or later be inclined into working your body physically. So some of those hikes, the terrain is steep. And
you're carrying stuff.
We're carrying over 40 plus pounds. I carried, when I was fighting wildfires, my tool of choice was a chainsaw. So I had my backpack made weigh a little bit more, close to about more like 50, because I had chainsaw equipment in my backpack, along with a lot of water and Gatorades and a jacket and everything else that I carried out there, plus a 27 pound chainsaw on my shoulder, hiking up and down terrain for long periods of time. For, like I said, up to 48 hour shifts. You can imagine how tired and fatigued your body is. But nothing but much in love and respect for all of those who first responders who's out there leaving their families behind and put it on the line. Doing things, and a lot of shout out and love to everyone out there wearing orange with the CDCR. Man, I love y'all. Man, I respect what y'all doing and hope that y'all can continue to trend and make good progress up there and, you know, come home and make the right decisions to move your life forward.
Real talk. Last thing, just since I have you, you ever run into animals when you're doing this?
Oh, my goodness.
You know, the reason why I don't go hiking is I don't want to run into no mountain lions. That's been my fear for the longest time. So, you know, it's like, but now you're in the middle of this fight and, you know, you got a lot of mountain lions. Coyotes I could deal with, but bears, I seen bears up around that way. You run into them in the middle of this fight, or are they like, thank you, my brother, and keep it going, or, you know?
I almost stepped on 4 rattlesnakes and almost picked one up. I've seen bears, California brown bears. We're not really worried about them. They're kind of scary in a way. A cat can chase them up a tree. Seen many of bobcats, mountain lions, a wild boar. Seen a bear with a cub, deers. You name it, wildlife is there. But the rattlesnakes is what I cannot stand. Ooh, they ain't nobody's friend. So okay.
Okay, so that's your fear. Mine is the mountain lions. You know. Yours is the rattlesnake.
Yeah.
Mountain lions. What were you gonna say?
The mountain lions, they see a lot of us, and they will leave. They won't get aggressive, but if they catch you by yourself, then there might be a different issue. But for the most of it, they'll see
if
you.
If you were the crew, you with your skinhead buddies, they're gonna fall back.
Hey, these animals outside of snakes, they're not scary. Outside of, they're not stupid. Hold on, it's time for us to leave. There's too many of them. We'll eat later.
Hey, man, I appreciate you taking time out. Again, let everybody know how they can be involved with Operation Flame.
Yeah, you can go on our website at operationflame.org or our IG page at operation_flame. And like I said, our main goal is to try to find our own training facility so that we can... I'm pretty sure we should be able to get this blanket purchase agreement, but we have to have our own training facility. So if we can be able to afford the actual rent portion of it, but what we would need help with is donations for the down payment on the building.
So considering how much the state and these prisons have been making off of your labor, they should take some of that money and redivert it. Into these operations that you have so people can, you know, fly. And so I would also just add, this is just me adding, people that are listening may want to make these phone calls and go, where the money at? You know, I mean, we got how many people we got out here doing this right now? How many people fighting the fires, incarcerated folks?
Oh,
there's like a few thousand, yeah, right?
There's over 1,000 actually fighting the fires, but they don't. I don't think that includes those. There are base camps set up. The inmate cooks the food for everybody that's on a fire. So it doesn't matter if you're a civilian firefighter from a state, forestry, city, any type of structural division. Inmates cook food for everybody. If it's 4,000 people coming to base camp a day, a lot of inmates cook the food for them as well. So they do a lot more than what you just see out there on the fire line. They're not giving credit or just due to those feeding and doing other things to keep the firefighters fed so they can come down and eat and then go get bed down.
Right. Real talk. So we need to make sure that this type of program continues in a way that's going to be helpful. Give a path for people. And if there's money that's being gotten, you know, spread that around.
We're just asking for our turn.
Liddell Hayes, our guest this afternoon, OperationFlame.org. We're going to take a break on Hard Knock Radio. We'll be right back.
In a fire camp, he learned the flame. Didn't know the fight, but found his aim. Fighting fires, saving lives in the heat. But when he got out, the struggles repeat. Door slammed shut, no place to go. Even with the skills, they said, no, no. Brothers are more than their passing, more than the chains. They've learned skills to fight, they've gained strength through pain. From fire camps to the streets, they rise above. Fighting for justice, fighting for peace, fighting for love. For love. In the heat of the fire, brothers stand tall, fighting for the community, answering the call. From the guilds to the streets, my brothers build it right, rising together, ready for the fight.
Ready for the fight. Ready for the fight.
No more fear, no more doubt. Brothers on the front line, they're gonna work it out. They are more than someone locked in a cage. Fighting for freedom, ready to turn the page. Turn the page. Brothers are more than their passing, more than the chains. They've learned skills to fight, they've gained strength through pain. From fire camps to the streets, they rise above. Fighting for justice, fighting for peace, fighting for love. Brothers are more than their passing, more than the chains. They've learned skills to fight, they've gained strength through pain. Operation Flame. Ready for the fight.
Talk, don't stop. EMN, at it again. Sandman, Daddy Man. Chris, Juwan, Cam. Yeah. Innovation, stimulating ill conversation. Anything else, just imitation. Simulation, step into the zone. The Bay Area zone. Hard Knock Radio, let's go. Big shout out to Need and Davey D. Yeah, right.
feel me? Yeah. Honing down at Hard Knock Radio.
Hard Knock Radio.
Kinda crazy though. Oakland, stand up.
Yeah. Stand up.
Ensemble Big Night Wolves.
Yeah. Kansas City.
Yeah. Yeah.
Bellevue. Yeah. Come on, check out.
Why every obvious think they hard knock when they ain't going all in and ain't paid the cost for the fee? Ain't nothing they made, they beats trying to eat till they ready for the steel grave. Leave, say, please. Maybe they'll save you a seat at the table with a great bread making a speech. Say, you beast and the lovers are neighbor to please. Hey, there's some shade on your name in the street. Let's go. It ain't David G.
Real Talk Radio. You and I rocking with the best in the West.
Yes, Coast. Monday through Friday.
Sing it, Chris.
Let's go.
All's my life I has to fight. All's my life I. Hard times like, yeah. Bad trips like, yeah. Nazareth, I'm f***ed up, homie, you f***ed up. But if God got us, then we gon' be alright. And when I wake up, I recognize you looking at me for the pay cut. Bahamas, I be looking at you from the face down. One Mac 11, even boom with the bass down. Skimming, and let me tell you about my life. Painkillers only put me in the twilight. We're pretty Benjamin is the highlight. I tell my mama I love her, but this what I like. Lord knows, 20 of them in my Chevy. Tell them all to come and get me, reaping everything I sow. So my karma come in heaven, no preliminary hearings on my record. I'm a f***ing gangster in silence for the record. Tell the world I know it's too late. Boys and girls, I think I've gone crazy. Trying to side my vices all day. Won't you please believe when I say, when you know we've been hurt, been down before. When our pride was low, looking at the world like, where do we go? And we hate po-po, wanna kill us dead in the street for sure. I'm at the preacher's door, my knees getting weak and my gun might blow. But we gon' be alright. To a house, you a car, 40 acres and a mule, a piano, a guitar, anything. See, my name is Lucy, I'm your dog. Motherfucker, you can live at the mall. I can see the evil, I can tell it, I know it's illegal. I don't think about it, I deposit every other zero. Thinking of my partner, put the candy, painting on a Rico. Digging in my pocket, and a profit big enough to feed you. Every day my logic, get another dollar just to keep you in the presence of your Chico. Ah! I don't talk about it, be about it, every day a sequel. If I got it, then you know you got it, heaven I can reach you. Pet dog, pet dog, pet dog.
Hello, my name is TK Kapurai and I'm an immigrant from Zimbabwe. I'm the host of The Global Cell, which airs live in the Air Room the first Wednesday of the month at 7 p.m. I host immigrants and refugees from various global spots. I like to bring out their lived experiences so the world can know something about them. I like to bring a lot through my guests so we may have diverse experiences, cultures, foods, music, interests, and anything on the platform. We can share and learn a lot through their live instructions. Let's do this together, not only for a better platform for our community, but a better community for our platform. Again, tune in for my show, The Global Cell, live in the Air Room, the first Wednesday of the month at 7 p.m. here on KBOO 90.7 FM Portland, and also available on the web at kboo.fm.
Thank you. You are listening to KBOO, Portland, Oregon, 90.7 FM on your Portland dial, KBOO.FM on your everywhere on earth internet dial. Stay safe, stay sane, stay tuned.